Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to another special bonus episode of the Paul Ryder Tapes. This one features one of our most requested guests. You absolutely loved him in the main series, so we're giving you his extended interview. It's an old friend of mine who I've known since the early 90s. He parted in the Manchester rave scene, and he also made an appearance in the Netflix documentary Weed the People and went out of his way to support Chico when he was sick. He's also the owner of Tuff Gong Studios in Warrington, where the Mondays rehearsed when they reformed in 2012, and he's currently working with Gaz Whelan on his solo project, Yogi G and the Family Tree. He's the inimitable ball of effervescent energy. That is the mighty Latch. I didn't know you had a recording studio there. I thought it was
taking the piss.
I didn't know it was a recording studio. I thought it was a rehearsal studio.
We've got rehearsal rooms downstairs. It's a fucking massive recording studio up here.
I did not know that.
I've been here 23 years.
I did not know that you had a recording studio as well.
Look, hang on. Let me show you around.
Hang on. Let's get the full view.
Nice. Did the Mondays ever... They didn't ever do any recording there, did they?
Not as the Mondays, no.
Oh, okay. But you've had Rowetta there, haven't you?
I was producing a band called... They were called China White.
Oh, okay, I remember them.
Then became the Wenatchee Tribe.
Right, yeah, I remember
and
that.
And Ro featured on a track with them.
Right.
And that's how I met Ro.
Right.
And then she started coming to me going, I want to come. And she gets asked to do a lot of vocal stuff, doesn't she?
Yeah.
So I was recording a lot of her vocals for years.
Ah.
So I think that's how, when the Mondays were reforming, I think that's how my name got thrown in the hat.
Right.
Because... they were specifically looking for something not in Manchester.
Right. And you know why that was, yeah?
Yeah, I do, yeah, yeah. So that my name got thrown in the hat, and then I think it might have been Gaz that contacted, but we spoke, they nipped down, and then went, yeah, cool, and right. Booked in here for 6 weeks. And then Paul came up to me one day and went, you know my wife? And I was like, do I? And he's like, yeah. I went, what's her name? He went, Anne Smith. No way, like, I've known Anza for years, so yeah. And then, you know, obviously Gaz as well. Well, we're working on Gaz's album at the minute.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know yeah. that.
Well, then something else you don't know is it's probably the last thing Paul's ever recorded.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one of the tracks has got Paul playing bass on it, and it's probably the last thing he's recorded.
Wow.
And there you go.
That's going on Gaz's album.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? It is cool.
I'm trying to bring together all of the unreleased material, but even any unreleased bass lines that haven't been used in anything, and then put everything together.
Right. Well, speak to Gaz.
Yeah.
Because like I say, there's definitely one song, because it was what the stems get sent to me from all over, you know, all the various right. audio files. And when I'm sort of yeah. piecing it together and trying to build it, one of them said, Paul bass. And I was like, and so I said, is this Paul? And he went, oh, it might be. I don't know. I'll find out. So he spoke to Dan, who recorded it. And he went, oh, yeah, it is. I went, do you realise it's probably the last thing he's recording? And he's like, oh, yeah. So we've got that. And it is on one of the songs we're working on.
How do you want to be referred to? Just as Latch? Or do you want your real name used? What?
Not bothered, mate, Latch, yeah.
What are you? Well, I don't even know your proper name.
I'm like Sinbad the Sailor.
Lee Latchford, is it?
Lee Parker.
Oh. So where did Latch come from then?
It's just a nickname from school. Do you really want to know? Picking locks. School, you know, like just up to hijinks.
Yeah.
That's where it comes from. But that's a secret.
All right. Okay.
I used to say, at some point in my life, I used to go, my surname's Latchford, so I didn't have to explain that.
Right. Oh.
That's okay. Where it comes from.
So that's probably why I thought your last name was Latchford.
Yeah. Well, you've probably been told that at some point.
Right. So let's start with, do you remember the first time you ever met Paul?
So basically, the band reformed in 2012. They wanted a location outside of Manchester to rehearse in. I think rolled through my name in the app. Some emails were exchanged, blah, blah, blah. We get the green light. Equipment starts arriving and the band are going to arrive on this day, if you know what I mean. So by the time everyone lands, it's like all hands on deck. I think we had a couple of techs here and it was just getting everyone set up. And obviously, you're being professional, you're running a business. It's just let's get these guys set up and give them what they need. So there wasn't really any time to get to know anyone at that point. So I couldn't say. It was possibly even when Paul said to me, you know my wife.
Yeah.
That was possibly the first time I ever met Paul.
Yeah.
It was sometime then, you know what I mean? Like I'm sort of hovering around just to make sure everything's running smoothly and they've got everything they need. You know, and then obviously we've got the sort of canteen out there. So when they were taking breaks or whatnot, you know, I might say hello or have a chat. But again, part of it is you want to be there to help, you know, and be on hand to make sure everything seems smooth, but you don't want to intrude either, do you?
Right.
But you know me, I'm sort of relatively easy to get along with. So
yeah. You
get chatting quite quickly. But yeah, that could possibly have been the first ever piece of conversation we had. You know my wife.
Right.
Which is always worrying when another bloke says that.
Were you a Mondays fan before any of this?
Yes. In the sense that, yes, I was off my face on drugs and was fully aware of the Happy Mondays. Can't say I was a huge fan, per se. I was a huge fan of all of the music of that time. You know, Mondays, Stone Roses, Charlatans, Soup Dragons, whatever, Farm, whatever. I was off my box. Yeah. But I was well aware of them. And, like, I don't know whether I realised this at the time or it's something you realise later on. With any sort of musical movement, let's call it, for want of a better term, the Madchester movement, there's always a couple of artists who sort of transcend it and are the epitome of it. And you've got to say them. Stone Roses in the Mondays, haven't you?
Yeah.
Now, what I will say is when they first started rehearsing it, I was shocked at how good they were as a band. Because one, when you're off your box on drugs, you're not like kind of got appreciating the musicianship. But two, because it was so produced in a sort of dance style, you never really got a feel for what that was like as a live band.
Right.
But when you hear them in a room playing, you're like, holy shit, these can play. You know what I mean? These are like a proper band. Yeah. So that surprised me.
Yeah.
But like I say, there's still, again, we all do that thing. There's moments throughout our life where a track sparks a nostalgia. And for me, Step On.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hear Step On and I'm back there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. What are your memories of hearing Step On in a club when you're off your box? Like, do you remember a night, particular night when you heard it? Or just take me back to those times.
Nowhere in particular. It was probably my most vivid memories of those times would be two nightclubs. And we went to a lot of different nightclubs, but two were sort of staples in where we went to. And one was a little place in Widnes called Stories that had three floors. And on the top floor was just that dance music. And it was full of smoke and everyone was just off the face. And the other one was Mr. Smith's, which was huge. I don't think at the time Smith's had the same sort of drug culture as some of the smaller clubs, but clearly there were a lot of people off the faces in there, me being one of them. And again, with my access to the dancers and I knew the door staff and everything else, so I was just roaming around on my face watching lasers and smoke, loving it, you know what I mean? I mean, again, there are several tunes from that era, including the Mondays, where I'm like, oh, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Hello.
So just tell me a bit more about those days. So what was like the routine for a night out? What was the vibe like?
We used to have a friend who was a DJ who lived really in the town centre in Warrington in a shared house. There was several people lived in the house. So what we used to do was go round his house. We'd all sort of meet there because it was a 5-minute walk into town. So we'd all meet at his house, all take our respective drugs while he DJ'd until we all come up. And when we were all up and ready to rock and roll, it was, you know, cover yourself in aftershave. And back then, if you were going to club, you had to wear a shirt.
Right.
And tie, you know what I mean? And trousers and shoes and head into town from there.
Yeah.
And I mean, again, not that this is particularly relevant. I was a massive fan of Speed when Ecstasy first came out. And one of our crowd was a dealer. And he'd be like, oh, you want to try these E's? They sort of just come out kind of thing. And back then, I think an E was like 25 quid, which was like a week. That was like a weekend on the piss. That was a weekend's boozing money. So we'd all go like, oh, yeah, yeah. So I'd have one. All the boys would have one. They'd all be off the boxes and I'd be stone cold sober, nothing. Oh. Like nothing. And I'm like, that was 20. That's my weekend money gone. And I'm nothing here. And, you know, I'd have ended up a few beers. And then, so next week I'd have some whiz or whatever. And this carried on for a bit. And occasionally they'd talk you into, go on, try another one. You must have had a dud. Try another one. Oh, all right, then. You try another one. And it didn't work. And this was for ages. And then you may or may not remember these E's coming out called Doves.
No.
Right. So were you not into the whole drug culture thing?
I wasn't in the country. I was in New York in 86. And then I was
right,
in
okay.
So I wasn't part of the Manchester thing, really, no.
Oh, right. Wow.
I was living in
right,
London.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, well, these E's came out called Dubs. And when I rocked up at my mates and knocked on the door, the lad who's the drug dealer answered the door. And he didn't look in a good way. Like, he'd had a couple of these things and he was fucked. To put no too fine a point on it. And I looked at him and he went, and he's like, you've got to try one of these new E's. You've got to try one of these new E's. They're amazing. I guarantee it'll work. I'm looking at him, frankly, I'm fucking terrified. And I went, go on then, I'll have one. And I thought, I'll box clever here. I'll just take half. Because I thought, he looks that fucked. Half should do it. And I'll save half for tomorrow or next week or whatever. So I bought this thing. Took half a bit. We're all there. We're all music. Let's go down.
Did it
work? No. So we get into the club. Everyone's bopping around. I'm sat there, like going, "What is going on here?" And they, you know, they're all the lads. It's again one of the beautiful things about that, particularly the early days of the drug culture, was it was a uniting thing. Everyone was like, "Oh," everyone wanted everyone else to enjoy themselves. So it's like, oh, yeah, have you got anything yet? Are you up? Is it great? You know, you're having a brilliant time and all this lot. And so they're all coming over. How are you feeling? How are you feeling? I'm like, nothing, nothing. So one of them says to me, how much have you had? I said, half a tablet. He went, have the other half. Well, at that point, I've got nothing to lose, have I? Right. So I took the other half of this thing. And I don't know how long later, 20 minutes later, I was not in a good way. Right, my fingers felt like sausages. You know when you're moving your hands, like every time your fingers brush past one another, they were like really numb and weird. And you know, and I'm going, what is going on with my fingers here? And then I went, do you remember as a kid when you were out on a winter's day and you were freezing, you used to come in and stand next to the radiator and it burned, but it was sort of nice. I was like that all over. So I've got these sausage fingers, I'm on fire, and I'm thinking, what the fucking hell's going on here? And then I was like, I was going all week. I couldn't lift my arms. You know, it was like, I felt like I was melting like this right now. And then another weird thing happened. The paranoia kicks in. So I'm quite a veiny person. Like, I've got, you know, veins on the back of my hands, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm looking at the back of my hands and all the veins have gone. And I'm looking at the back of my hands going, oh, Jesus, where have my veins gone? Like, I don't feel good here. And my mate who's with me, who's drunk, can see him struggling a bit. And he leans over and he says, are you all right, mate? You all right? And I went, yeah, I'm cool. And he went, what's up? And I thought, all right, don't be paranoid. Like, so I went, can you see any veins in the back of my hands there? Thinking he'd go, yeah. And then I'd go, brilliant. That's what I wanted, veins in the back of my hands. And I went, can you see any veins in the back of my hands there? And he went, no, you're all right, mate. There's nothing there. I was like, oh, fucking hell. So then the lad who sold it me comes over and he's like, you're all right. I was like, mate, I can't walk, I can't move or anything. He went, come on, we're going for a walk around, we'll get some fresh air. I was like a zombie walking through that nightclub. I vividly remember walking up the stairs. There must have been a 6'7" bodybuilder in front of me I just literally walked into his chest like that. And I looked up like this at him, you know, and he must have been looking at me thinking, I'm going to knock you out or whatever. And it clearly he looked into my eyes and he just stepped to one side and I just carried on walking in a straight line. Went outside, got some fresh air, gathered myself together. I was all right after that. But that was the first time and he worked on me.
And did you have a nice time after that?
Oh, yeah, it was great after that. Yeah. Okay. I mean, my drug of choice was speed, amphetamines. I fucking love that drug, which was poor man's cocaine, basically.
Yeah.
Because cocaine was too expensive then for the likes of us pongos, working class lads who had a minimum wage job, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So then did you switch to ease after that?
Occasionally, yeah, mixed and matched. I mean, there was a point in time, Angela, where if anyone give you anything, you'd have took it. Because it was, what I mean is, it wasn't, again, you're young, you're not, you know, you're not thinking, oh, someone could slip me. Rohypnol didn't exist then, or, you know what I mean? You're not thinking date rape or poison or anything else. Like I say, that whole period of time was sort of beautiful. It's like any movement. Its intentions when it starts off are very pure, aren't they? And it's a sort of good uniting thing and it brings people together. It then becomes somehow, I don't know, infiltrated and devalued and abused and stuff. But to start with, every movement, I think, is like that to start with. You know, most of these things start with the greatest of intentions and it's beautiful and it's lovely.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone's having a fabulous time. And that's how I remember it. I think, you know, by the time it all started to go wrong, I remember going, we went to the Hacienda a few times. You know, a mate of mine, another lad in Warrington, was like, oh, I've been going to this club in Manchester, you should come, it's great. Luckily, we got there a couple of times before that all started to go wrong.
Right.
But then it all starts to go wrong and you just, like, swerve that, you know what I mean?
You remember the Mondays on the dance floor being a real part of that rave scene?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I could probably, you know, if I sat and thought about it, I could probably give you a playlist. But the Mondays would definitely be on that playlist.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, like I say, again, bear in mind I'm in music, so I always look at things in the musical sense, the transition. So you've got the early dance music stuff, which was sort of simple 808 drums and the Chicago house stuff and stuff like that. through the late 80s, early 90s. And then as the 90s progressed, we started to get, and again, it's a sort of natural progression. It's like that thing, you know, people go, white people can't make rap music, right? If you've grown up listening to rap music, of course you can make rap music because you are a product of your influences. So by, say, the late 90s, all the young lads who had been listening to dance music but were playing analog instruments were going, well, let's blend that together. And yeah. I think that's what the Mundies did. I think that's what the Soup Dragons did. I think that's what the Stone Roses did. Those bands were that blend.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And then coming out of the other side of that, came your Britpop thing. They sort of maybe rebelled against the dance music to become more indie guitar band stuff. But for that period of time, that transition was young lads with real instruments trying to emulate dance music, if you will.
Right.
And Stone Roses and the Mundies, isn't it? That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably a whole gamut of other bands. Well, there are, but it's like I say, every sort of, if I said to you now, punk music, chances are you're going to say the Sex Pistols.
Mm-hmm.
You might say the Clash. You know, there's a couple of others, but there's always one or two standouts who transcend that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, over the passage of time, we also get to appreciate the fact that it was actually great because it still works now. You know, I listen to some of the punk records I used to listen to now, and they're appalling.
Mm.
But I would probably have a Sex Pistols song played at my funeral.
Yeah.
No, I'm serious.
Yeah.
Because it's such an important thing for me. The Pistols, ironically, are probably the reason I got into making music and doing this.
Really?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah. Yeah. The whole ethos of punk was that you don't have to be some middle-class art student to make music. Any dickhead can make music or create art. Mm-hmm. It does not necessarily mean it's going to be good. But this punk encourages to have a go.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and I suspect the Mundies probably did that for a whole generation of people. Like I say, there are these standouts in every little, I don't know, 10, 20 years, there's a new music movement, you know, and there's always a couple of standouts. The Mundies are going to be, they're already on, they're written down in the history books, aren't they? They're already there now. And like I say, the beautiful thing is, even now, I can listen to many of their songs and go, that's still a great song.
Mm.
A great song's a great song's a great song.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's weird, because it shouldn't work.
No.
It shouldn't work.
Yeah. But it does.
But that's art, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So tell me a bit more about when they came in to the studio. Did you hang out with them much?
Well, I already knew Ro. I was on hand really to lend any bit of technical advice or just run things through. They're in my building, they're my guests, and they're paying me money to be here. I want everything to go smoothly.
Right.
You know, so I'm nearby but not necessarily in their faces. So of course, like I say, if they're having a tea break or whatever, you get chatting. And like I say, they're all really nice guys, but I gravitated towards Paul and Gaz. I think we're of a similar age. I think we grew up at the same period of time. We've got similar experiences. I think we just hit it off. We're very similar in a lot of ways, I feel.
Yeah.
So we just hit it off big time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And Paul's a smoker, I'm a smoker, so there's that, because we're social pariahs, aren't we? You know what I mean? I think he's the only one that smokes in the band now. And Mark doesn't smoke. Gaz doesn't smoke. I think Ro would quit.
Yeah.
So, again, we were smoking buddies.
Yeah.
Me and Paul. I mean, that man liked a fag.
He did, didn't he? He
and did. A can of Red Bull.
I know. A crate.
Why did he not have a sponsorship deal?
I know. He really should have done. He should have done. Spending a fortune on them.
Me and Gaz, we do talk about him when we're together occasionally. And that was one of the... Not long after Paul died and we were talking about it, that was one of the things we were saying. It was like, fucking hell, the amount of cigarettes and Red Bull, how he lived this long, I don't know.
I know. So were they like you expected? When you heard they were going to be coming in, did you have like a preconceived notion about what they might be like?
Yeah, of course. Of course. I still thought they were drug-taking lunatics like they were back in the day. But of course, I was then and I'm not now, so why would I expect them to still be the same? I don't know. We're all a bit more mature now, aren't we? Yeah. It's not to say there's not an inner lunatic.
Right.
But you temper it a bit more these days, don't you? Or you pick your moments. So, yeah, I was expecting a lot of drug-fueled lunatics smashing the place up and got all kinds of shenanigans. And simply that was not the case. They were professionals who were there to do a job, who've matured a bit as well, as has myself, hopefully.
Yeah. And did you go in the room and listen to them play? You mentioned before that.
Occasionally, but you didn't need to. I could quite easily hear them from the cafe area.
Right.
My dad come one time, just happened to call in. I think they were on a dinner break. My dad was brilliant. One of them fellas talked to anyone. So they're having a dinner break. Gaz and Paul were sat in one of the diner booths just eating. Gaz was probably eating something like hummus. And Paul would have been eating a pie, probably, whilst smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
Again, that I could never understand. Eating and smoking at the same time. I was like, how do you do that? And he was like, oh, I fucking love it. I was like, I can't do that. I can't eat and smoke at the same time, one after the other, yeah. So anyway, my dad called him this day, and he must have said hello to him, and they said hello back. So to my dad, that's an invitation to sit down and chat. So he ended up sitting and chatting to Gaz and Paul for probably about an hour. Honestly, and God knows what they were chatting about. And they said, oh, we've got to go now. We're rehearsing. We're going back in there. And he went, yeah, no problem. And then my dad comes over and went, oh, they were nice lads. What do they do? I said, oh, they're in a band in there. He said, oh, what they call that? I said, the Happy Mondays. He'd never heard of them, obviously. And he was like, oh, right. And then he mentioned Paul, and he went, he's got a lived-in face, hasn't he? First Monday morning, he's in work, telling all the lads, oh, you'll never guess who I was knocking around with the other day. The Happy Mondays didn't have a clue who they were. All the younger lads, no, you weren't. And he was like, yeah, I was chatting with him. We had a drink together and whatnot. That was my dad for you. But yeah. And then they, both of them later on was like, who's that fella? I said, oh, it's my dad. Like, oh, he was lovely, wasn't he?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Brilliant, brilliant. Did you go to any Mondays gigs back in the day?
My memories of that time are somewhat eroded.
Okay.
It may well have played at the Hacienda when I was there.
Right.
But I don't... Weirdly, back then, weren't really going to gigs. It was the time of the DJ, which is... They were one of the things that took it back from the DJs a bit, weren't they?
Right.
You know what I mean? It's through life, there's this natural progression, isn't it? So you're young, dumb, full of cum. You get a car. All you think about is girls. And then you probably get into your drinking and your drugs. And then you get your own gaff or whatever. So I'm probably slightly older than the generation who were really the Mondays hardcore fans. So by the time the live gigs were sort of becoming a thing again, the road, I was at Spike Island.
Oh, right. I was there.
I had to be in bloody Widnes. It's my hometown. You couldn't not go that, could you? Really, I wasn't into the band thing then. I was the DJ was king, and it was those bands that were sort of taking that back a little bit. I suppose, again, that's part, I suppose, interesting about that movement. That's what was happening a little bit. It was becoming a real band thing again, as opposed to just the DJ.
Yeah. Did you go and see them when they'd been rehearsing with you?
Well, you're sort of mates by then. They were here for at least 3 months. So you're working with them day in, day out. And then, of course, Annie's cleaning or milling around or whatever. So they get to know you. And and like I say, instantly, I know Paul's wife.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? It sort of become, you become very friendly. So then you go, oh, we've got a gig here. You're coming down because it's local. So, yeah, of course, we went to a bunch of gigs. But again, for me, working in this industry, I'd much rather just go and hang backstage and have a giggle and a laugh and then go, right, go and play your gig and we'll wait here. And when you come back, we'll hang out, if you know what I mean. We always ended up stood at the bloody side of the stage watching rather than in the front of the stage. Because it's your mates, isn't it? You know what I mean? It's not, you're not like there to see a band. You're just hanging out with your pals who just happen to be going on stage.
Was it what you expected when you went to the live show? Was it what you'd expected from what you'd seen in the rehearsal rooms?
Yes. Like I say, the thing that surprised me the most with them is that they were a real band.
Yeah.
That is definitely the thing that surprised me most because, like I say, when you're listening to them in a club off your face and it's, you know, Paul Oakenfold's had his hands on it and it's got a 909 kick underneath it, it's not a real band anymore. I know in the cold light of day when I listen to it now, I go, oh, there's Mark playing, there's Paul playing. You know, I can hear Gaz, whatever. I now know what it is. But at the time, you're not analysing it any deeper than I'm off my face and this feels great.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Not that you could ever call them a boy band, but for all intents and purposes, they could have been a boy band fronting Paul Oakenfold's dance music, for all I know. But then when they get in a room and you hear them play together, you're like, holy shit, these are a real band who can actually play. And that was the thing that surprised me the most. So then when you go and watch them as a more mature gentleman, not off his face on drums, you're going like, Jesus, these are really good. As a band, not just the music, but as a functioning unit, this is really good.
Did you get a sense that they were very nervous when they reformed and weren't sure whether they were going to be able to pull it off?
Yeah, I think a lot of people were rusty. And again, from their perspective, you see, bear in mind, like I said, I spent a lot of time with them, particularly Gaz and Paul. So you sort of become friends, so you get to know a bit of the backstory and, you know, how they feel about stuff that they might not say to someone who's not a friend or something like that. So, yeah, there was a lot of politics, wasn't there? So they're reforming. First of all, it was like, one, can we all be in a room together before playing a bloody note? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So there's that. There's the rust factor. There's the trepidation, I suppose, of we could put a lot of energy into this and it starts working and then it goes horribly wrong again very quickly because of the personnel. Do you know what I mean? So there was, I think all of that was at play, particularly with, I think Gaz was like typical drummer. But I'll just sit at the back here and play. And Gaz don't give a fuck, does he? So if it all went tits up, Gaz would be like, fuck it, I'm gone. Do you know what I mean? Whereas I suspect Paul was probably a bit more nervous about it.
Yeah.
I suspect probably quite a sensitive individual underneath. And also there's the brotherly thing. So any issues would have hurt him more.
Was Sean around for those rehearsals or was it just the musicians?
Musicians. I think Sean turned up twice.
Right.
I mean, to be fair, that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a good thing that them lads who haven't played together for I don't know how many years got in a room and played. It was probably beneficial to them to not have a singer there. Because again, if you've got the singer there, you've got the pressure of shit, we need to get this because he can't do anything until we've got locked in.
So in
a weird way, it was probably a good thing.
Yeah.
But I suspect towards the end, he probably should have been here a bit more than he was.
Right. Remember the times when he came in and what it was like?
Yeah. Immediately different. It's weird. It's even though the Mondays are a real band in every sense, right? So when I was at school and in bands, you formed bands with your mates. I'll be the drummer, I'll be the guitarist, I'll be the bass player, and you got in a rehearsal room, you made noise. And poor Dave was shit on bass. So you go, oh, Dave, you're a bit shit on bass, mate. We're looking out for a better bass player. But you still picked a bass player within your sort of your circle of friends. Yeah. So it was a real band in that sense. the Mundys were that. It was a real band of mates that went one day, let's form a band, and muddled through and became what they became. And you definitely got that sense of brotherhood, camaraderie within the band. But when Sean arrived, it's Sean and the band. He's not a part of the band in that sense. Or it didn't feel like that to me anyway. It felt like it was Sean and the band.
Right.
And the atmosphere changed. It suddenly was not as fun, for want of a better term. That's no disrespect to Sean. I suppose there was a lot of tensions there and everything. So everyone was suddenly like, oh, game faces on here. We're not here to enjoy ourselves anymore, which you should be. Yeah. You know, that's sort of the point. Wasn't here a lot, to be fair. The lads, not that he necessarily needed to be here a lot. The lads needed to sort of gel and lock in together as a band. So he only made an appearance occasionally just to run through with them. But I suspect he, towards the end of the rehearsals, when they were getting ready to go on the road, he probably should have spent more time here just to try and build that cohesive unit.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's that bothered about that. It's just a vehicle rather than this is us against the world, which is what a band should be.
It's a shame, isn't it? Makes you wonder how much further they could have gone if it had been more of a cohesive unit.
Do you know what? Yeah, they probably could have gone a lot further because, again, you evolve. They're all really good musicians. They can all play. You see this so many times. You get a band or whatever. It can be everything. It can be down from the management down to the label to the band. Everything is part of a team. Everything is a cog in the machine, right? Yeah. And if it's working, it's literally because of everything involved in that. The moment you start dismantling it,
yeah,
poof, the magic's gone.
Why won't we do an album with the proper musicians?
There's something weird. Maybe something will come out in years to come, or maybe we'll never know. There was some weird tension. Don't know.
So, were you around when Paul found out that Chico had got cancer? Were you around?
They were here. Before you got the diagnosis of cancer, there was a lump, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And I think Paul was telling us that, he was a bit concerned they found this lump. We're going to go and have some tests or whatever he did at the time. And it was like, oh, right, okay, mate, well, you know, fingers crossed, blah, blah, blah. And then the next thing, it's like, oh, it's cancer. And now we're waiting to find out what the prognosis is. And then it seemed to accelerate what happened after that. It was like, shit, he's getting rushed in. And then the chemo and all that. Like, he was certainly devastated by it and concerned and wanted to get the fuck out of here. But again... In one way, I suppose that's a testament to Paul. Personally, I think I'd have just gone, fuck this, I'm gone.
Yeah.
He was trying to do the right thing by both camps, I think. But he was like, I've got to go. I mean, I think if it comes to it, it was like, I'm going. Yeah. But I think it was like, I don't want to stitch you lot up in the meantime. Do you remember all the girls sending Chico a get well card? Chico's within months of my daughter's age.
Right.
As a parent, watching what you lot were going through at the time with a child within months of the age of my daughter, you're looking at your own kid going, fucking hell. Like, Jesus Christ. How the fuck are you two doing that? It is the worst, isn't it?
But you don't have a choice. You just have to do it.
Well, I know that. It's like when someone dies, you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you've got to keep pushing through, but you... On the other foot, outside looking in, I'm going, oh, God, where your kids are involved, that's the worst, isn't it? I know you don't have a choice, but that is about as bad as it gets.
Yeah. But you kept in touch with Chico on Facebook, didn't you? You used to send him messages every so often.
Yeah, well, again, it's like when someone's that ill or someone dies, what do you say? It's everything... seems dead trite, doesn't it? You know, like, oh, I'm sorry to hear so-and-so's died, or I'm sorry to hear your kids.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It always feels dead trite, and I don't like reaching out. Again, I'm one of these people who always feels like, am I reaching out for me to make myself feel better? I'm looking at my daughter. And you just think, what can you say or do for that kid? I just thought, again and again, a child, I suspect, processes all this different than us, than an adult.
Yeah.
They probably don't have as much fear as an adult.
No.
And the whole psychology and the way of processing probably is different. So I just went, listen, we're coming back to America next year. Like, how do you fancy going for a ride on the bike? What am I going to fucking say? Do you know what I mean? Like, so all as I'm thinking is, there's a distant goal there. He can go, oh, that, I suppose, a distraction technique, isn't it? Or something like that. So that's how that came about. It was like, what do you say to a kid who's fucking got some horrific thing going on?
Talk to me about when you came to America. Paul was there.
Okay. When we come filming. No, that was the year before. We'd come to yours the year before and we had a couple of friends in tow. And then the year after was when we come over to do the thing with Chico.
Yeah.
I mean, we were travelling around anyway, so we were going to pass through LA, so it's like, be rude not to... You know what I mean? You got a fucking mate who lives in LA. If you're passing, you got to come in, haven't you?
Yeah.
You got to come and say hello. Yeah. But again, Annie, we pulled up and she's like, oh, there's a film crew here and... Oh, no. She's not into that at all.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you a funny one. So we get on the bike and we kick Chico up and we ride off into the sunset, and then the glamour of television, we then have to park up round the corner for 20 minutes while the camera crew drop everything and reload it into the... So me and Chico are sat on Cold Canyon Road. We sat on the bike, like, and I'm saying, you know, how's it going? He's like, yeah, all right, blah, blah, blah. I said, you're getting back to Manchester much? Because obviously they've pretty much grown up in America now, haven't they? And he said, yeah, we go once, maybe twice a year, go and see Nan and Grandad and all that lot. And then jokingly, I went, oh, do you miss it? Thinking he was going to go, no. And he went, oh, yeah, a little bit. And I went, really? What do you miss the most? And he went, the cold and the rain.
So how did you feel about being filmed, being on We The People? Have a lot of people like recognised you from it?
Because... I suspect if I was in America, I would probably get a lot of attention. Did I tell you about when I showed it to my mum? Ah, Angela. So, my mother is old school. She was born in the late 30s, grew up during the war. She's a bit reformed now, but, you know, staunch Daily Mail reader, voted Tory, you know, King and Queen and all that lot. My mum was one of them. And I think I broached the... Never took a drug in her life.
Right.
Unless it was prescribed by a doctor.
Yeah.
Right. And I think as a result of filming We The People, I was maybe having a conversation with her about cannabis. You know, and in my mother's head, if you smoke a joint, you're a crack addict. Do you know what I mean? It's like she knows nothing of that world. So I must have been, there must have been this recurring theme of we were talking about cannabis, and I'm going, no, it's really good for your mum. You know, there's this documentary on Netflix, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I eventually convinced her to sit and watch this thing. Now, I didn't tell her I was in it. So we're watching We The People. And it comes to the point where I'm either on the motorbike or next to the motorbike, kitting Chico up. You know, and I can't remember what I said, you know, like, oh, let's get this leather jacket on you. And my mum went, Jesus, you can tell he's not American, can't you? And I'm like, and then I must, you know, put him on the bike or whatever. And then she stood up and she went, is that you? And I'm killing myself, I mean, yeah. So I watch it. I was killing myself.
Excellent.
You can tell he's not American.
Brilliant.
It's your thumb.
Can you remember when you found out that Paul had died?
Someone either rung me or texted me. I'm trying to think who it was. Gaz had been in here the day before we were working. I was sat in here, probably sat right there. Yeah. I might have been waiting for Gaz to, or, you know, sort of prepping for Gaz to come. that just come out of nowhere, didn't it? One ill, or that was like, that's the same age as me.
Yeah.
I literally come out of nowhere. Yeah, I was here.
What did
fucking
you think?
Stunned. Yeah. I'm just fucking shocked. They weren't rehearsing here. They were rehearsing in Manchester. And Gaz said he felt bad at rehearsals. He said he just, you know, like when you got flu or something, you just feel lethargic and you just sat in a pity pool feeling sorry for yourself. Mm-hmm. He said he wasn't, he said he didn't play a note, which is unusual to not do anything. Mm-hmm. And he'd gone home, he'd had his tea. I think his mum had checked on him and said she felt something went right. He hadn't had his medicine or something like that. She heard him snoring at like 11 o'clock at night.
Right, yeah.
So he was alive at 11 o'clock at night. And then Mark was there at what, 9, something like that, the following day.
Amelia had found him and she
ran. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know. And then they're fucking doing CPR and it fucking shocked Angela because it come out of nowhere. It wasn't like he was ill.
No.
He was literally, he was fine. He hopped on a plane, got here, felt a bit ill, dead. Like, where the fuck did that come from? That was just bizarre.
I know.
And we all know our feelings on it, the vaccine.
Yeah.
That's me and Gaz were talking about it.
Yeah.
Because we didn't like that idea to start with.
No.
And he went, he was fine. He had that. Yeah. The boosters, come here.
Yeah. I know.
Gone.
Yeah.
In a weird way, it surprises me because, again, Paul's like me. We were punks. We grew up as punks. We're anarchists. And he's not an idiot, Paul. He wasn't an idiot. He wouldn't have just gone, I'm not doing any research on this or having an opinion. I'll just do what I'm told. He's not that type of person.
No. I think maybe he thought he had to have it to get into England or something.
I suspect he did.
Something like that, yeah. What did you make of the funeral?
A fucking hour wet sung that song. I do not know.
I know.
That was hats off. Hats off to her.
Yeah.
It was quite an emotionally charged day.
Yeah.
And for her to be able to get up and sing, one was like hats off to you.
Yeah.
But that was beautiful. You know, all the usual suspects were there, weren't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, don't know how Rogue did that.
No.
That was impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I felt sorry, Chico looked lost. I felt Amelia was the one I felt the most sorry for.
Yeah.
Jesus, that was just horrific. Particularly when we went to the creme.
Yeah.
That was I that's where I welled up at the creme.
Really?
Yeah. I was fine throughout it all. You know, like I say, I have a view. I'm going to a funeral to it's a celebration of someone's life as opposed to mourning their loss, if you know what I mean, in my head. And in that respect, that funeral was a success. It was a celebration of Paul's life.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Well, he said the reason I'm doing this is so that when I'm gone, everyone's going to like know who I was and know the truth.
Yeah, yeah. But you, Gaz was telling me something like that, and I was like, because you only finished it not long before he died.
12 days before he died.
That's what I'm saying. It's just bizarre the way things have lined up.
Even more bizarre is that both of us, like, he was going to England for a few gigs, and both of us felt this real sense of urgency to get it finished before he went to England. Right. And when I got the call, it was 6 o'clock in the morning. I got up for a wee in the night and all these messages. So I knew something was up.
Yeah, yeah, you do when you get a call at that time in the morning.
Yeah. And I just said, oh, yeah, yeah, I knew it. Like, I didn't know I knew it, but
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And I think he knew too. It was weird, really weird.
Yeah, it's this one. I mean, it is all odd, mate. It's really odd.
I know. I mean, I know he wasn't like the picture of health.
No, I suspect he's never seen the inside of a gym in his life. No. That man loved a nap.
Yeah.
How he could nap drinking that much Red Bull, I don't know. But do you know what I mean? He was lazy, but not in a bad way.
No.
Just
relaxed.
I'd like to think of him as a sloth. Only doing what was necessary. Do you know what I mean? Not lazy, just only doing what was necessary.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, that type of personality.
Why walk when someone could carry you somewhere?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, why walk when I could catch a train or a taxi or something? Yeah, absolutely. That was sort of his philosophy.
Yeah.
It was. It genuinely was. A laid-back individual you'll never meet. Like, even now, I'm working with Gaz. It's like working with my brother. We're so dialed in just to his humour and references. You know, like Paul, you know, that subtle humour that might slip past someone. I walked in one day... And they had this Mac on, and it's sort of like a camouflage sort of pattern. Not overly camouflage, but, you know, when you get close and you look at it, it's like, oh, that's nice, it's cool. Yeah. And I walked in one day, and Gaz went, oh, I like that coat, where'd you find it? Yeah, see, you didn't get that.
Oh, because it's camouflage.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, and I just pissed myself laughing. Now, that's what I'm saying. It's that subtle. You didn't even get that. He did. He laughed. You didn't get that. But I just burst out laughing, you know, when he said it. That subtle, dry humour, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Paul was one of them. You know, just make some little comment. He was Mr. Laidback. Mm. He was one of the most laid back in a cool way people I've ever met. He was just... And again... Like I say, I think him and my dad really hit it off. I think they were very similar natures. My dad was very comfortable in his own skin.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't want anything, didn't need anything, didn't value things. You know, he was... I found Paul a lot like that.
Yeah.
A lot like he was just very content.
Yeah.
Just cruising along in his own lane, doing his thing. Don't bother me, I won't bother you. He was very much one of those people, if you know what I mean. Yeah. In his company, it was always fun and chill, not boring. Do you know what I mean? Boring's the wrong word. I'm using the wrong word.
I know what you mean.
Boring. Yeah, it wasn't like
let's... Dramatic.
Whereas if you were knocking around with Bez, it'd be a different fucking story, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like that would just be like non-stop.
Yeah.
Paul was like the polar opposite. Possibly why the band worked. You know what I mean?
Was Bez around the rooms much? No.
He's a lovely fella, but he's a bloody nightmare, isn't he? But he's Bez, so it works.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And don't get me wrong, there's no harm in him. He's like a fucking Duracell bunny. You know what I mean? I'm fatigued watching you. But I mean, he's a great lad, lovely lad. Look, now he is a sweetheart.
Mark's nice as well, but he's different altogether, isn't he?
Mark's a dad.
Yeah.
Mark is a dad, but was a dad from the day that band started.
Yeah.
Like literally and metaphorically.
Yeah.
You know, he's just sort of Mr. Sensible. I mean, fucking hell, he's a school teacher.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He had kids when the band started. He's Captain Sensible, isn't he? He is Mr. Sensible, Mark. Again, lovely fella. I haven't got a bad word to say about any of them. I got on really well with all of them. They're all really nice people. They're just different personalities. Like I say, Mark is Mr. Sensible, Mr. Just Dad.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can see Mark in slippers, cardigan, pipe, fireplace. That would be Mark's environment, if you know what I mean. And then you've got Ro, who's the diva.
Yeah.
But and everything that entails, which in my experience, you sort of need that in your singers.
Yeah.
There is that element that makes a person a singer, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So Ro's what Ro is. And again, I've worked with Ro tons of times, so we get on okay. And then like PD, again, he was a really nice lad, PD. Do you know what I mean? He's really a sweetheart. I'd say he probably lacks confidence, but again, he was a sweetheart, lovely lad. Bez is a sweetheart, mad as a box of frogs. But me, Gaz, and Paul are cut from the same cloth, so we just it off like.
Yeah, brilliant. Oh, thank you so much.
No Nick. Worries.
You've been really good.
Good. I hope you can use some of it. Well, like I say, when you said, I want to send someone out to talk to you, I'm thinking, I ain't got no, like, you know, fucking great insight here or, you know, like some mad story. There was me, Paul, and 12 hookers. You know, you know what I mean? You're like, I'm not sure what value there is in this, but yeah, sure, go for it.
Honestly, you've been brilliant.
No problem.
Thank you.
Oh, no worries, mate. I hope you can use some of it. And it's always nice catching up with your friends.
That's it for this week. In a moment, you're going to be hearing the track that Latch was talking about earlier, which is The Ballad of David Bowie by Gaz Whelan's side project, Yogi G and the Family Tree, which features none other than Paul Ryder on bass and Gaz Whelan on vocals. Please become a patron of the show and help us to keep these episodes coming. We really can't do this without you. Next week, we're going to have a shout out to all of our lovely patrons. Literally, everybody that supports the show is going to have their name read out in the show next week. So if you'd like your name reading out, please go to patreon.com/thePaulRyderTapes and sign up. Also, go to paulryder.tv for links to our shop and our socials. Thank you so much for being here and listening. We really could not carry on if it wasn't for you listening, so we're really, really grateful. Please keep spreading the word about the podcast. We're actually approaching 100,000 downloads, so it's really amazing. We're really grateful. Thank you for telling all your friends about it, and please continue to do so. Please give us a nice review if you've not already done so, and a rating. That really, really helps us. Big, big love and thanks, of course, go to Latch. And, of course, to the man himself, the late, great Paul Anthony Ryder. Have a fantastic week, and we'll see you next week. Same time, same place. Lots of love. Bye.
Freedom is in the mind, not the soul.
Glistening Productions.